This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vadaszewski.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Inch Podcast, a late January edition. This podcast recorded January 25th, 2012. I am Joe Vadaszewski, joined tonight by our regular podcast panel, Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hi, Bus.
Hello. What's up?
Not too much. Hockey season's here. Also, CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. Dowd.
Good evening, or almost good morning, Gladdy.
Hello. WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Happy winter.
Happy winter.
Or something.
And Hockey East writer, senior writer, Kevin Zeese. Hello, Kevin.
Howdy, guys.
Pleasure to have you all here. Not only are we wishing you a happy winter, but also a happy Australia Day, as that is being celebrated halfway around the planet right now.
Happy Chinese New Year also.
Yes, and happy Chinese New Year. The Year of the Dragon.
Remind me to call Penny Taylor and wish her a happy Australia Day. Remind me just to call her. I don't care.
Who's that?
Oh, you so. No, so little. If she was a golfer, you'd know who she was. Let me put it that way.
I would.
I've never heard of her either.
She plays for the Phoenix Mercury of your WNBA and will be a star for Australia in the Summer Olympics.
Well, Jess has been assessed a two-minute minor. So, yeah. While he's serving that penalty for unpodcast-like talk, conduct, I should say.
Wouldn't that be an interference penalty there?
Yeah, maybe give him a double minor. Unsportsmanlike and interference.
Was there embellishment involved?
If you keep talking about the WNBA, we'll find a way to make sure there is.
That's a 2 and a 10.
All right, going to take a little different approach to this because there's a lot of things that we're talking about, you know, offline, and now that we have the forum to get together for a podcast, we'll bring it up and kind of throw things around, things we're talking about, you know, individually within the leagues we cover and follow, but also from a national perspective. This year, I think, unlike any other, and you guys correct me if you can recall another quite like this, but we mentioned in First Shift 2 weeks ago that there's only two teams at the time that had 15 wins, and now I think there's only five. We're still 2 weeks away from somebody getting to 20 wins potentially, and that's only possible for a handful of teams. What do you attribute this to from a national scale? What characteristics of teams are you looking for down the stretch to make a team what I would call sustainably good? You know, who's got the right elements to their team and to their game to make a deep run? And I guess what are your thoughts on these kinds of things that we face? We'll start with Bus, I guess.
You know, I think it's just cyclical. And I think what you got right now are a lot of teams where they've lost a lot of key players, not just early guys who've left early, but also, in the case of a team like Miami, teams have lost a ton of impact seniors, and you just can't replace those guys right off the top. It's just taken a while for the next wave to kind of cycle through, and I think that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. You look at, I think Miami is a great example. They do have some upperclassmen, but not as many, and obviously not the caliber of somebody like an Andy Mealy or a Carter Camper. So it's taken a while for different guys to grow into those roles. And I think you look at a team, like Minnesota, where they have, obviously a young team and they don't have a lot of upperclassmen and didn't necessarily lose a lot from last year. But again, another team that is, where guys are not only growing into roles, but also, experiencing things for the first time as a group and as a college hockey team. And, you know, you're looking at some sophomores there like Bukestad and some inexperienced guys like Zach Budish who are being called on to more or less be the leaders, and it's the first time that they've had to experience that. So I think a lot of it is just inexperience all the way around.
That's a fair point, you know, and I think what we've seen and maybe one of the things that we'll look at for the rest of the season here is how teams have improved from first semester to second semester and which teams are trending in the right direction. I mean, you mentioned Miami. That's a perfect example of that. I think Union is a team that is headed in that direction as well from teams I see regularly. And
I think a team in that mold that can't help but improve just health-wise is I got to look at Denver. I mean, this is a team that has been missing so many key players, and now finally they're starting to get more healthy and starting to look lineup-wise more like the team we thought they'd be. You know, and plus these guys that have been out for a while, you know, Sam Britton, most importantly, you know, they're not going to have that fatigue that normally guys are getting this time of year. You know, if you can get healthier as the season goes on, as opposed to the opposite way, I think that's a team that could be primed for a late run just based on having a full contingent back.
I like Michigan in that mold too. I mean, they, not so much, they didn't lose a lot personnel-wise, numbers-wise, but not having John Merrill the first half of the year, since he's come back, this team has really hit their stride. I think they've only lost one game since he's been back in the fold. And we've got, you know, a lot of guys coming back from the Frozen Four team. They lost some elite players, but now we've seen some of the younger guys step up, and they look poised to help carry this team potentially. And they've got a chance to build some confidence where they finish up with Michigan State, Northern Michigan, and then at Bowling Green. It's not exactly a murderer's row, so they should be on a roll when it comes to playoff time.
That was a very good series last weekend for anybody who, and fortunately for college hockey fans, both of those games were on, and they were both really, really good games. Speaking of Michigan at Notre Dame, it was a split, and I think deservedly so, and Dowd, something we kind of talked about like the Monday or Tuesday afterwards was, you know, in our opinion, it seemed like Michigan played better on Friday, but Notre Dame won, and Notre Dame played better on Saturday, and Michigan won. It was kind of a weird series like that, but still very, I thought it was a really, really good series both nights, and, you know, low scoring, but still that didn't mean that there weren't a lot of quality chances, and you know, both teams I thought skated very well, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. And I guess something you guys touched on, I think, in First Shift this week, it's interesting that Notre Dame was without Riley Sheehan on Saturday night, and Michigan, he's one of their top penalty killers for Notre Dame. Michigan came out and put two power play goals in the first period, and that was kind of the story of that game. So I guess the margin of error was that small. It was maybe one player between the two that that took Notre Dame away from sweeping versus you know, versus a split. So
yeah, I like that series a lot. It was very entertaining, and I think you know, those are two teams, you know, that I think they're trending in the right direction, although they've been, you know, I guess they've had their ups and downs over this course of the season, but compared to almost everybody else, they've been fairly steady. Of course, I think with the season, you kind of have to redefine what steady is, and what steady means, because outside of Duluth, and I mean, nobody's really managed to get on a roll. Michigan did there for a little bit when they were undefeated in 9, and I guess BU's on a roll now, or as hot as anybody. I mean, maybe it's just a timing thing this year that, you know, somebody's going to be playing well at the right time, and that's all it's going to be.
Yeah, we've seen it in both both directions, I think, that you've seen teams get hot and kind of step up to that elite level and then slide back from week to week or night to night even, which is maybe where it gets to be troubling. I just can't help, you know, I was looking at some things and kind of considering maybe when we're putting the Inch Power Rankings together. I think there are, whether or not they're realistic, it is something we can debate. But I think there are probably more than 20 teams right now that really honestly feel they can win the national championship. And I guess that's a good thing, you know, for those kids, because, you know, as Duluth, you know, showed last year, that if you get the right matchups and the right guys playing well for 2 weeks in March and April, you can win those four games. And I think if you look at, you know, pick anybody, you know, even from 15 down in the power rankings, Western Michigan, Ferris State, Maine, North Dakota, Nebraska, Omaha, Quinnipiac. And then we had, you know, Colgate, Michigan State, Wisconsin on the bubble, and could even consider a couple more teams. But, you know, I think all those teams really believe, you know, they still have an opportunity to play themselves into the tournament with a good stretch run. And they've all shown, you know, at times this season, they have the opportunity to go out and sweep a weekend.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's what – just kind of in addition to just, I think you look kind of at the teams out there and the records, and you get, and kind of as we let off with, you know, nobody's hit 20 wins yet, and you know it's gonna be at least 2 weeks before somebody gets to 20 wins, and it's probably the way it's looking right now, it's gonna be another 2 weeks after that before a third team gets to 20 wins. You know, which some people might scream mediocrity, but it also screams that this could be the most wide open postseason that we've seen in some time. And you mentioned a team like Maine. I mean, they've only lost twice since mid-November.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a point in the year where they were 3-6-1, and they're 12-8-3 now. They just beat BC twice, and now they play at BU this weekend. You know, another team obviously that's been playing well. So, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, there's a lot of hockey left to play, but I don't see this changing anywhere between now and the end of the regular season. I mean, it's going to be like this. There's going to be 20, 22, 23 teams that are, you know, legitimately in the hunt.
And with that will come the inevitable situation. It will happen that way, that when the top 16, you know, teams are announced into the bracket, you're going to have a team that's maybe just on the outside who will have won head-to-head meetings against that team, or maybe even knocked them out of a league playoff. You know, and there'll be some grumbling that comes along with that when that time does come. But this year more than any other. Kevin, what can you say about Maine?
I was just going to echo what Bus was saying there. They were 3-6-2 on Thanksgiving, you know, and that's they've really played consistently well over the last couple months here. And the biggest thing that I noticed with regards to their results is that, you know, they're getting solid goaltending and they're scoring goals. I mean, that's it sounds simplistic, I know, but
good way to do it.
But it's true. I mean, a lot of these teams that have been inconsistent over the course of the season, a lot of it's got to do with their goaltending. You know, you can look even at a club like Boston College that started out really, really well this season. Since the 1st of November, they're 7-9-1. You know, they've only won back-to-back games once since the 1st of November. You know, and I think a lot of that comes, you look at their current situation, they're unsettled in their goal right now, where they've got three guys who have all shown that from a given night they can either be the man or they can be beaten easily. So
door openers.
So, you know, I think Maine is one where they've started to get consistent goaltending, which was a question mark coming into the season for them. And as they've proven, I mean, you look at the scoring leaders in Hockey East and you've got three guys from Maine sitting at the top of the table there. So that's a positive situation that they've got going, and it's a winning formula. Whether or not they can sustain that now for the next 5-6 weeks and get into the playoffs with that type of momentum, nobody, I don't think, around the country has shown that they can sustain that for a longer period of time than say 6 weeks.
I think that Maine has really taken care of the games on its schedule that it should take care of. A lot of their wins, since Thanksgiving have come along, Clarkson, Vermont, Clarkson again, UMass, UNH, who's not having a great year. And then they went to Merrimack and lost and tied, and maybe you're thinking Maine is kind of what they are and sit there about fourth in that league. But then they respond with a great home weekend against Boston College. I'm interested to see how they handle the back-to-back element of that and go on the road, especially. They're at BU for two games this weekend. And maybe that's just what Maine is. They're better than the bunch, but not as good as the top teams in that league. So they'll have a chance to prove themselves, certainly against a very good BU team. But then it's, a non-conference series with Huntsville, two with UMass, one with Providence. Northeastern has been up and down. UMass Lowell is another team that's really taking care of business. So Maine has a chance, but I'm a little concerned that they might just be kind of at their peak there.
Going in the forecast for last week, we spotlighted that series, and one of the things we put out there specifically was, the top three guys for Maine are going to get their goals. They're going to score. The top three guys for BC are going to get their points. It depends. In my view, that series hinged on which support guys were going to, who was going to come through with a deeper lineup. And, Maine got a bunch of goals from different sources. In fact, their top line didn't get a goal on Friday night in the 5-4 OT win, and then they got a bunch of goals from the not top three, although those guys scored on Saturday.
And they got three of the seven.
Yeah, but there's a little bit more depth there. I think that that some of those guys, and a couple of them are freshmen. Some of those guys are, if they start to contribute, we saw what happened last weekend.
What are you looking for from teams? You don't have to be specific, but even just traits of teams that might carry them down the stretch. When you say, okay, this team does blank well, and that's really going to help them. Jess?
I think, a real key to that is having a second line that can produce. We see so many teams where they've got a great top line, and you find out down the stretch that that's not enough. And, Minnesota Duluth is a prime example of that, that the emergence of that second line last year was so important to them that you couldn't just put your checkers against the Connollys every time they were out. We're seeing that a little bit with Colorado College. I saw that last weekend, in that they're relying less on the Schwartz brothers line and they're getting more balance out of a second line. And I think that's a huge thing if you're hoping to win four games come March and April.
We were looking at Union a little bit, last week, and all of the factors, the metrics seem to be there for that team. They've got very good goaltending, with Troy Groznick. special teams are excellent. Scoring offense and scoring defense both rank top 15 nationally, probably top 10. And they're penalized very little. I think they have the sixth fewest penalty minutes entering last weekend of any team in the nation. That seems to add up to a lot of the things, you know, when coaches set goals before games or before weekends. You win those categories and you're going to be in good shape. So that to me is encouraging for Union. And I think having been there a little bit is a positive sign. You know, like it took Miami a couple cracks before they could make it to those Frozen Fours. And you've got to kind of be in it a little bit before you can make a run at it. And Union got that last year, so.
Joe, to the point you made earlier, Joe, about you know, Minnesota Duluth last year kind of showing that, you know, if you get hot, you can win four games and you know, kind of providing hope for those teams. It's interesting when you were rattling off that list of the 15 through 20 teams, you brought up, you know, a team like Quinnipiac, or you just more recently brought up Union. I think another thing Minnesota Duluth did last year was they showed a lot of schools that size. I'm thinking Merrimack, I'm thinking St. Cloud State, I'm thinking Union. You know, these schools that aren't Division I across the board like a lot of recent Frozen Four champions we've seen, I think that provided kind of another level of hope to these smaller schools that, let's face it, since 94 when Lake Superior State won it, we hadn't seen a team like that win a national championship. Yeah, you can win two games if you're Bemidji State or if you're RIT or if you're St. Lawrence going back a little further. Yeah, you can get to the Frozen Four. You can make a nice splash. But I think Minnesota Duluth winning all four games kind of provided another layer of hope for some of those schools.
That's a good point. You know what the other thing that you point to, and this is a fact I've been considering, you can debate some of these guys what level they might have fallen into, but you know, you say, oh, well, goaltending wins in hockey playoffs and those kinds of things. There really hasn't been a like truly elite level goaltender to win the national championship since possibly Jeff Lurig in 07 with Michigan State, and certainly, I mean, Brian Elliott in Wisconsin in 06 is kind of the last like big time top 10 Hobie type guy that won this thing. So, I mean, some of the two of the teams I saw that statistically they're probably not terrible, and I don't think their teammates or coaches would throw them under the bus in public record, not under you bus, under the bus.
There's
Jerome Bettis.
Yeah, I think Colgate and Harvard have pretty good teams, and I think their goaltending might be a concern. So that to me is the thing. And the one team, you know, in Cornell that has quietly kind of put themselves into the top 10 and is taking a lead in ECAC hockey that certainly doesn't have to worry about the goaltending. They've got a good one in Andy Isles.
I don't think you necessarily need the elite level goalie to win it. But I think you've got to have somebody who's consistent, somebody that you know is going to make the saves, not give up a bad goal. Somebody that basically you can count on for, you know, keeping you in the game, giving you a chance to win it.
Gladdy, we've talked about this a million times, and the analogy that we always come up with is, and we go to college football, you need Craig Krenzel in goal.
Yeah.
He's not going to make mistakes.
He's laughing.
He's going to do his job. He's not going to make mistakes. He'll occasionally make the big play, but he won't make the terrible play.
That's what the NFL's built around.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll take the 4-yard check down ahead of the 38-yard slant. So.
The game manager?
Yeah, really.
Prime example of that I've seen this year in person is Notre Dame. I mean, when I think it appears like they found the guy that can be the consistent guy for them in Stephen Summerhayes, and it strikes me as though that, you know, knowing that you can get something reliable like that on a given night, I think that it gives confidence to the entire rest of the roster.
Well, look at Sean Hunwick too. I mean, he's done a good job. He took Michigan to the national championship game last year, to the verge of the Frozen Four the year before. And I think that his play sometimes might get construed as spectacular, because of the story, the walk-on, little brother Matt. Nobody expected anything. His story is spectacular, but I think his play is solid. He makes some big saves when he needs to, and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So,
but with Hunwick, I think you're looking. He's a guy that can he can steal a game, I think, which puts him, I think, a little on a little bit of a different level than maybe a Summer Hayes. I mean, with Summer Hayes, and we've kind of said this about Notre Dame since day one, they just need to eliminate the bad goals that their goalies were giving up. I mean, that was mainly Johnson, Mike Johnson, who was, I mean, he'd make some brilliant saves, but then he'd let in some head scratchers. But certainly I think as long as they got the mailman there back there, somebody who's just gonna, you can set your watch on him, coming Monday through Friday and delivering your mail, except on holidays, because everybody gets one anyway. They're gonna be better off for it, and that's really, Notre Dame case in point. All they needed was somebody to just be the game manager, for lack of a better term, in goal.
I think one of the things that characteristically, and I guess this goes back to what Kevin was saying as far as reliability and consistency, is there's a lot of guys who can, have a shutout Friday night and then get stung for five the next night. Yeah. And that's not good. And even if you're not elite and you're not, 1.9 goals against a 93.5 save percentage, even if you're giving up those 2 and 3 goals a game, it's not giving up that second goal. Maybe one gets through that you could have had, but then the next shift they come down to score again. I think a lot of the guys who have won this thing and really carried teams on deep runs have limited the runs, the outbursts of opponents, and that is the characteristic that maybe you need most.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Gladdy, where you've got guys who will pitch a shutout one night and then, like you said, give up 4 or 5. Your average looks great. You got 2-0 goals against average, but, are you giving your team a best chance to win when they don't know if that's the night you're going to give up 0 or if you're going to give up 5?
Exactly.
Billy Sauer?
William?
Yeah, but in all seriousness, no, I mean, that was a big problem with him.
I don't remember him giving up 0.
One of the other things, guys, that I've seen, one of the coaches that I'd previously worked with quite closely in the past always mentioned that by the time January rolls around, that your freshmen are no longer freshmen. And I think that's a big key moving forward here, is you get teams that are able to get scoring from some of those younger guys who, by this point, they've adjusted their game to the college pace. And I think if you can get some of those younger guys contributing on a regular basis right now, that bodes well for a team's long term. It kind of ties in with what Buss had said earlier about having multiple lines being able to score. But being able to get some of the contributions from some of your younger kids is critical and it's especially in a season like this.
And that is, brings us back to Miami and Maine, perhaps, that and Denver, that they're getting these contributions. So that is a good point.
I want to talk about Denver a little bit, and I'm sure Jess can elaborate on it a little bit more, but I really think the fact that they have managed to hang around like they have with so many guys hurt is really remarkable. I mean, they're at fifth right now in the WCHA. They've got a couple games in hand, and
you know, they're getting guys back. Britton comes back this weekend. Is kind of what we're hearing, or what they're saying out there. Same with defenseman John Ryder. Bo Bennett should be back in a couple weeks. You know, I'm sure it's going to take a couple weeks for those guys who are coming back to, you know, get comfortable. But, you know, theoretically, you're looking at a team that has a ton of talent that's that could be hitting its stride right as we go into March.
Yeah, that was the point I was trying to make, and especially with the case of Sam Britton. I mean, when Gopher fans around this region have talked to me all year about, boy, can the Gophers do it this year? I keep saying, let's wait and see what they look like by late January. And more specifically, I'm looking at Kent Patterson and wondering, is this guy going to just break down and hit a wall at some point, having played every minute of every game for them so far? And Denver's got the opposite thing where, you know, if they can pop back in it and Britton can come back to any semblance of what he was last year, you've got a goalie who's starting fresh essentially on February 1st and should have no problems fatigue-wise by 6 weeks from now when the playoffs roll around.
Yeah, I think I would throw him in that Miami category too, as a team that's, you know, they're definitely trending in the right direction, and we really haven't talked a lot about them since, you know, since the first month of the season. You know, and mentioning Minnesota, I don't know that I've ever been as disappointed in a first place team as I was watching Minnesota last weekend, especially on Friday, as I told Gladdy. It looked like they were running the Brad Lowhouse offense. It was just a bunch of big white guys standing out on the perimeter shooting. I mean, for the kind of size and skill that that team has, I would certainly like to see them go to the net a lot more. I mean, they are
going to the net. It just takes them two shifts to get there.
they got to pass a baton.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. My weekly podcast mention of how big the ice is at Mariucci. You can expect the same next time.
Yeah.
Wait, they have big ice at Mariucci?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, but I mean, let's face it, this Minnesota team, too, and I made this point with some Gopher people this week, they're in a scoring slump. You know, everybody points, well, they scored 6 against North Dakota, but look at the game's on the other side of that. You know, they scored 2 and lost, scored 1 and lost to North Dakota. They scored 1 and lost to Colorado College. They scored 2 and beat Colorado College. So, you know, those games early in the season where you were going up to Duluth and getting 10 goals in a weekend, that stuff seems long gone. And, you know, Eric Halla has not had an offensive impact of any import in a while. Sam Warning, who I was really high on early in the season, has somehow played his way into the doghouse and has been a healthy scratch a couple nights here now. So it's a team in transition. Let's put it that way.
Dowd, let's you know, we've mentioned Miami, we've mentioned Notre Dame, we've mentioned Michigan a little bit. What else is going on there? I mean, you've got a Northern Michigan team that is in ninth place and might play themselves in the NCAA tournament over the next couple weeks. You've got a Michigan State team that, you know, is over 500. They've got 13 wins, I think it is right now, 13-9-4, kind of hanging around. Ferris State has shown signs. Western Michigan has been great and been pretty mediocre. What's the expectation from you for those teams as far as sustainability and who might have it in them to make a run?
I guess you started with Northern Michigan. Northern Michigan, I think the key there, they don't score a lot of goals, but the key there has been they've gotten solid goaltending all year long. And I think, you know, you're right when you said, you know, maybe solid goaltending, maybe elite goaltending isn't what gets them there. So it's, to me, with Northern Michigan, the story whether they can, and they've been reasonably successful. I think they've only lost two games since Thanksgiving. But if, you know, whether or not they can score goals and compete with the elite teams, because they're just not going to be able to keep the puck out of the net at the same rate. I guess I want to see them score some more goals over these next few weeks if they're going to convince me they can be competitive as an NCAA tournament team. On that note, Michigan State's a team that's pretty intriguing. They're a little bit buried right now in the CCHA standings, but they're scoring more goals than I thought they would. You know, I think they've got five guys who have more than 10 goals and two or three guys that have more than 20 assists. And, you know, they've really got some solid goaltending. They've got two solid goaltenders, you know, maybe even bordering on elite at times. And so that's a team that if they get everything together, they, you know, all the pieces fall in place, they can make a run in the CCHA tournament and you know, maybe give themselves the confidence and play their way into the NCAA tournament. And then Western Michigan's an interesting case. You know, they go ahead and sweep Notre Dame, and I know there was a little bit of controversy there, but surrounding that sweep of Notre Dame, you know, they were swept by Minnesota Duluth and by Miami, and so you really wonder if this team is ready to compete with you know, the teams that are really trending well and looking like those are Minnesota Duluth and Miami, two teams we talked about as you know, potential title contenders tonight. So you know, they've got some goal scoring, but they don't have a lot of they really don't have anybody who can put the team on their back. They've got decent goaltending, but you know, to be the thing they have in their favor, I guess, is two games in hand. While they're only 1 point out of first place or right on the verge of first place in the CCHA, but they close out with Bowling Green, Alaska, Ohio State, a team that started well but has kind of struggled lately, Lake Superior and Ferris State. So, you know, they've got an opportunity to pick up some points, especially with those games in hand. And they might very well win the CCHA, their first ever CCHA regular season title. But I got to see something from them in these closing weeks to make me believe that they're going to be a contender for a playoff title and to, one, make the NCAA tournament and to do anything once they're there.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Ohio State yet.
Well, Western to me seems like they're kind of a, you know, two wins, two losses, three wins, two losses. You know, they're not going to lose a bunch in a row, but they're not going to win a bunch in a row. Which as a, you know, which makes it, I think, hard to get a read on them. But I think that the one thing that they do have working in their favor, and Dowd, we actually talked about this earlier today, is their schedule. It's pretty favorable.
Very favorable.
As they, especially when you kind of, if you're going to lump them in that group with Northern and Michigan State. You know, this is Northern's schedule from here on out with, you know, what is it, five weeks left in the regular season. They are at Miami, Ferris at home. They go to Bowling Green, they go to Michigan, and then Lake Superior at home. Michigan State might even be a little tough. Well,
yeah, they got a tough schedule.
Yeah, they're at Ferris this weekend, where even when Ferris was mediocre, Michigan State always had a tough time there.
Everyone has a tough time there. That's a tough place.
Yeah, it is. At Ohio State, two with Michigan, one at home and one at the Joe. Alaska comes in, and then they close at Notre Dame, which is pretty daunting. And we've talked about Michigan State earlier in the year where you know, they've been better than obviously they have the last couple of years. But that's the kind of team that has to literally have everybody has to compete at 100% every shift or else they're in trouble.
But they are. That's another team that might have some depth, you know, issues. They just don't have the bodies, you know, to.
Right. And I think we saw that a little bit when they played Michigan. You know, close games, but but Michigan wins two out of three.
Yeah.
And that was without Merrill, I believe, wasn't it?
all three times.
Yes, correct. Yep.
2-0-1. Yep. So.
Yep. July and December. So.
Yeah. Now, and you know, the other thing about Michigan State, I mentioned them having all those 10 goal scorers, five guys with more than 10 goals or more than 12 goals. One of those is Torrey Krug. And so Jess's point before about having, more than one group of forwards or, threats up and down your lineup, at least in the top two lines, is something that team really lacks, and maybe they can get out there and get some physical guys out against them and shut down the guys who can score. It's different if you have five forwards and you can split them up between two lines or three lines and really generate some action that is tough for other teams to defend. But when you've only got three, it's really hard to spread that out. So you're right. I think depth would be a problem for Michigan State.
What about Boston College? Here's a team, you talk about the ups and downs. I know a couple weeks ago in the power rankings, I believe it was our first one of the month, I said, BC hasn't had 10 losses or whatever it was on January 1 in 11 years or something, I mean, whatever the stat was at the time, but I mean, they're 14-10-1 right now, and, they just lost back-to-back games against Maine. Maybe, like we were saying, that Boston University is peaking in late January as beanpot time nears. How many times have we seen BC at this time of the season raise question marks and then put it all together starting around Valentine's Day till the second weekend in April when they're getting a big trophy in an NHL arena somewhere? Or NFL arena somewhere.
I thought we would never speak of that event again.
Oh,
I thought it was called a football rink.
It is a football rink, NFL rink. There you go. The Little Caesars Pizza Bowl rink.
I don't know what. With regards to BC, it just comes down to being a long season. I mean, a season that stretches from basically the end of September into March, even April. I think you're going to see some periods like that. And you're right, BC tends to have a little bit of a kind of a lull a little bit there, but. You're right, Gladdy. The pieces are there. I think once they figure out their goaltending situation, I think they'll be getting back to being consistent. Not sure exactly why things have gone the way they have for them, but I don't know.
I kind of think with BC, sometimes I wonder if they've been there and seen it so many times. We've seen them have that late season peak. I had a chance to watch them only once, and so this is only judging them on one night, which is not a representative sample. But against Michigan at the GLI, they fell behind and then climbed right back in it. And I was sitting there with my dad, who really doesn't follow the college game, doesn't know anything about the teams, and he said, "This looks like a game that's going to end up 5 or 6-2 for Boston College," and then Michigan kind of jumped back into it, a couple things bounced their way, and then Boston College just looked disinterested. And so I just wonder if that's a team that's been there and done that so many times, and they have, they have elite prospects, and they have guys who've gone deep into the tournament that this middle part of the season just isn't that interesting and inspiring to them. And it'll come together for them once it suits them.
I think there might be something to be said for that, the been there, done that mentality, because they've been through it before, and they've had their hiccups in the middle of the season and managed to pull out of it and make some nice runs over the last third of the season. What I'm wondering is do they have the talent up and down the roster? Because obviously over the last 3 years, they've had some pretty darn good teams. And a goalie who was a very good college goaltender. You know, this time around, they don't. I don't think they have quite the depth that they've had in years past, and you know, obviously their goaltending is a concern right now. So, I mean, from my perspective, I think we're getting to that point where we need to see them start to make a move and pull out of that, pull out of the funk, and start that ascent. And I don't know if it starts this weekend or if it's, you know, the bean pot, which, you know, obviously I think we all agree is, you know, historically they has had way too much emphasis put on it. But I mean, I think that they're really a team at the crossroads.
This team, you know, I want to be careful here and maybe disagree a little bit, but it's easy to say, you know, BC always does this, or North Dakota always does this, or Michigan always does this, or whatever team it might be. But the players change, you know, so drastically. This isn't like a, you know, a New York Yankees dynasty that's going to keep its roster together for the most part, or a New England Patriots team that'll keep the key pieces together and then, you know, fill in spots around there. But this Boston College team, this year's team, get so much out of this junior class. And of course, you know, they were part of the Detroit Frozen and the national championship there. But they were also part of, you know, one of the bigger upsets, I think, in recent tournament history last year when Colorado College knocked them out in the first round. And everyone expected so much from Boston College last year. So that, to me, will be interesting to watch and see if that was a, you know, a learning or building thing, or maybe it was the kinds of guys who have really led these Eagles teams to great successes have moved on. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, it's a talented bunch, but I'm curious to see, you know, how this ends up and what it might mean for these guys. They could be looked at, you know, at the end of their careers as they were in the right, you know, the last year of a great thing, or you know, they were a big part of it and continued that on and passed the baton, so to speak.
Guys, see, I'm not as well-versed in Hockey East as I am in the CCHA, and just looking at those last two seasons, the season they won the national championship in Detroit, that really is a shocking turn of events come the middle of February, isn't it? Then you compare it to last year where they kind of struggled through January, maybe, and all right, sorry, I guess the other way around. Sorry, they struggled through January 2 years ago and then got to mid-February and ran off a bunch of games in a row, won the national title. Last year, they just cruised through the second half. I think they lost twice until that game against Colorado College.
They cruised through the whole season. They were 30-8.
But
you're right, you know, you go back 2 years when they you know, the year after they won the national championship the first time, as you said, you know, in January they had that year they lost five games,
mm-hmm.
Won three, lost five. You know, and you're probably thinking, you know, I think they're an interesting team to watch because, you know, as you mentioned, Gladdy, you know, was it the guys? You know, was it the previous leadership and the previous guys on the team that had that ability to kind of navigate the team through these rough waters, so to speak? You know, obviously it's a coaching staff that's been together a long time that are not going to panic. You know, I think they may be the most interesting team to watch down the stretch.
They certainly have that intrigue. We'll see. And I'm going to disagree a little bit, Bus, on what you said. I shouldn't say disagree. I think you used the phrase the beanpot has been, you know, made more has been made out of it than maybe should have. And I think from a results and record thing, that's probably true. But to me, what that signifies is a segment on your schedule. I think some coaches will break down the season and say, okay, let's get to Thanksgiving break and we'll play some non-league games. Okay, now let's get our finals done and we'll play some holiday tournaments. And then you know, that tangible break in the schedule when you say, okay, bean pot time's here. Now is, you know, there's no more messing around. I think that exists for those teams. So I think there's some import there more so than what it does in your profile for the national tournament.
Right. Yeah, I was.
I know you're referring to the overall record and
yeah, the
exposure of the event.
Who wins and who lost, you know.
Yeah.
But I think in that respect, it is a good milestone because, you know, those teams, I think it's a good for a coach to be able to look at something like that at that time of the year and say, okay, this is when we need to have our A game or be at least as close to it as we possibly can. You know, and obviously, you know, we make fun of the bean pot a lot, but still, you know, there are some, you know, some tournament-like elements to it as far as the hype and the intensity, you know.
It's on TV.
In that community. I mean,
it's more media coverage. You get to press conferences. And yeah. Oh, yeah, that's all there, definitely.
Yeah, but hype and intensity in that game, those games didn't help Boston College when they got to an empty rink against Colorado College last year.
Well, that's the problem.
They weren't exposed to enough, and they got to go on the road and play Colgate or something.
If fewer people had shown up, they should go play at Ohio State.
Yeah,
that would have been a good prep.
Yeah, I'm gonna make an apology here to a team that I. Not in any public forum, but I know I mentioned it, and Bustle backed this up, and some other people I've talked to, I know I've mentioned this too. I made a prediction, you know, not in any public manner or anything, but talking to some people, and I said, let me see what the date of this would have been. So it was mid-December. I said Merrimack will be out of the top 20 by February 1st. I didn't see it from them. I thought their schedule set up well, and they did what they had to do early. I got a look at them in a 1-1 tie at Colgate, and then they lost a week later against Union at home. And I said, you know, I don't think this team has the chops to last. I think they're gonna fade a little bit, and really they haven't. They've kept things together. You know, nothing spectacular. You know, they got 3 points against Maine, split with New Hampshire. And they lost those back-to-back games, or I'm sorry, they had a loss and tie against BU and BC right that first weekend of January. So I thought they would go away. I didn't really know if they had the staying power, but they've hung around. And in fact, it was Colgate that flipped out, flipped and kind of slid down out of the rankings since that game. But congrats to Merrimack. They don't have enough scoring, I don't think, to make a real deep, impactful run. But I think they can certainly get a top four Hockey East spot with what they have. And generally that means a good shot at the NCAA tournament. So
it sure does.
Even though you didn't know it, I might have badmouthed you a little bit, Merrimack Warriors, so my apologies, and keep on doing what you're doing.
Their schedule gets a little bit tough coming up here, too.
Yeah, two with BC and two with Lowell on back-to-back weekends.
And BU next weekend.
That'll put some hair on your chest.
It will.
The other thing that they've got coming up is something that kind of caught my eye this week, is that they've got two games coming up at UMass. And UMass is a 500 team, but they are the epitome of a Jekyll and Hyde club, where they are 7-0-3 at home and 0-7-2 on the road.
Nice.
That, you know, so I don't think you can really discount the fact that they've got the two games coming up at UMass still. Like, nobody's been able to win there this year. So that's not going to be an easy haul either. So,
well, you know what? I want to take that one step further. In their 10 home games,
They're outscoring opponents 39-21 in their 9 road games. They're being outscored 39-23.
So they're +2 on the season.
And they're 10. They're up. They're 2-1 in neutral games.
Okay.
And they've outscored opponents 10-9. So.
So +3 goal differential for UMass.
Yeah. They're +3. They're +18 at home and -16 on the road and +1 in neutral. So.
And they got tons of guys playing in the Super Bowl.
They got one at least. They have more than that.
The receiver for the Giants.
Yeah, that's the only one I know.
And the linebacker for the Patriots. Ahedibo or whatever his name is.
Oh, I don't know. I know the Cruz kid.
Follow Jeff Howe on Twitter for more UMass updates. What's up, Rook Howe? Hope you're listening to the podcast on your flight to Indy.
Hey, congratulations to him to get to cover a Super Bowl, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Long-time podcast listeners will, of course, recognize Jeff Howe.
That's...
Rook.
I believe when he's in Indy, the NAACP is giving him an award as well.
All right. He had a Facebook status after the conference finals that said, "I don't know anybody who's excited to go to Indy." And he replied, "Well, glad he was." And I was. So that was cool.
I was excited to go to Indy once. It was fun.
I like that city. That's a great. That'll be a good Super Bowl town. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Super Bowl has gotten to be such a it's like spring break for sports people. You know,
just yep.
You got to go to the beach and have parties by big magazines and companies and. So from that standpoint, Indy might not fit the glamour profile.
Big hospitality tents and all that manufactured fun that's not really all that
fun. Pay thousands of dollars to feel important, to sip drinks with people who won't talk to you. Yeah,
right.
So, hey, if that's your idea of a good time, then
go somewhere where there's a whole bunch of huge parties that you can't get into. That's great.
Yeah.
Or as Gladdy calls it, Thursday.
I do my notebook on Thursday, boss.
Nah. Yeah, I don't go out. I can't. So, whatever.
TJ Siner, UMass. 11 goals, 16 assists, 27 points. Nice season. And 49 PIMs.
Yeah, he's a triple threat.
Most likely to get a Gordy.
And it should be noted his PIMs are 15 for 49. So he's
skill.
He's not just deucing it. Yeah.
That's 2 tens at least in there.
I like that.
All right.
Got some sandpaper.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Oh, this is a little gripe that I didn't get into the first shift that I will mention on the podcast. Every coach I've talked to, and several that I haven't spoken with but have read what they've said in various methods and means and media that have reported it, is talking about how banged up their team is. Well, guess what? You've played 23 games, 24 games. It's late January. You're going to be banged up. It's hockey, you know? Stop using it as an excuse or a complaint or a mention. If you don't want to deal with it, go coach Connect Four. That's all.
Women's lax.
That game is surprisingly physical.
Yeah, but you have a radius.
Not in the cross check.
You got a halo.
Yeah. So. I got
something quick.
Go ahead.
If you are a business owner in the Fargo-Moorhead area and you're thinking of writing a check to the effort to have Division I hockey at Minnesota State-Moorhead, write the check, okay? We had yet another news story today about we're almost there. We're so close to being there. We're going to extend the deadline again. It's just If you support this thing, write the check and let's get it over with.
So they're raising private funds for this thing? Or that's what it's dependent on?
That's a key element. It is corporate support.
I gotcha.
And, you know, let's face it, in markets like that or like Duluth or Grand Forks or wherever, having Division I hockey is an economic impact. You bring a lot of people in.
Oh, for sure.
A lot of hotels, restaurants, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You raise the profile of your community, things like that. There's a tailor-made spot for them just waiting in the new WCHA, so this could be a good thing, I think. But it seems like there's a lot of people saying, well, we'll wait and see, and, you know. Stop waiting and seeing. Write a check. Let's do this.
What about what rink would they play in? Do they have a campus facility? I know there's townie rinks there.
They do not have a campus facility. Fargo has about a 6,000 seat rink. The Urban Plains Center is what it was called when it was originally built, home of the Fargo Force of the USHL, and they played, I want to say, like the World Under 18s there. Couple years ago, the one that's in the spring.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, so that's where they would play. I mean, it's not on campus, but Fargo Moorhead is not that big a town. I mean, it's maybe a 10-minute drive from campus. So
it's in a different state.
Are they in different states?
Yes, they are.
So
over the river, through the woods, kind of thing.
That.
Any New York Giants fans out there? Opinions there?
Yes,
so
sir.
What?
Well, if it's a Minnesota State University, right?
Yeah.
And all your economic impact, and obviously there's some budget there, and plus tax dollars being thrown at this thing.
Plus, you have to deal with that border crossing between Minnesota and North Dakota, and that's such a pain.
You have to have all your papers in order.
Yeah. It's. I mean, yeah, I mean.
But I just say get it done.
All right.
Well, in reading the article, though.
Where does the Minnesota or the Moorhead high school team play?
They have their own rink in Moorhead.
How big is that?
Home of the Spuds. A couple thousand, probably.
That might work.
It might work, but I mean, I think they're thinking bigger than that.
Well, good for them.
I hope they are. I mean, you know, you'd think this could be a big thing.
I'm looking at the article that was in the Fargo Forum. Wednesday's Fargo Forum, as a matter of fact. And the school wants to have $30 million committed by the beginning of March. So what is the school contributing? Is my question.
That sounds like they're going to build if they need that kind of cash.
Yeah.
What's the price tag on RIT's place? I'll look that up.
I don't know. There was an article about that. I think College Hockey Inc. actually has something about the new.
Oh yeah, they've. They did a recent feature on many of the new rinks that have been constructed or renovated.
Yeah, the three in particular were the
30 mil for the new RIT rink.
There you go.
There you go. Boom.
There's your measuring stick.
And the overall goal was, their overall goal is 37.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I guess that's in the neighborhood, in the ballpark. So.
I mean, with the new WCHA, I mean, you're not going to need a giant rink.
Yeah, that's true. You're going to hope to get some home games against, you know, even Duluth and St. Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So
the big prize for a non-conference game there will be North Dakota, obviously, because they're the neighborhood rival, but. Just be fun to see it happen. The Dragons. Nobody else in college hockey is the Dragons, are they?
That's solid.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Drexel.
Cortland State.
Two SUNY schools in the same league are Dragons, Red Dragons.
Wow. With that in mind, Moorhead's going to change their name to the Huskies.
Yes.
or the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Bulldogs, anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about the NFL, I think, has a relatively even split, but I saw it broken down into someone had a stat that seven of the last eight or whatever the number was of the Super Bowl winners have been named after people, not animals. So, hockey has mostly animals. Some people, a couple colors.
Yeah.
But the animals are a definite predominant prevailing majority.
I root for an NFL team named after people, and I can tell you they've been left out of that.
That's all right. I root for an NFL team named after animals, and they've been left out of it since 1957.
Oh. I wonder where the Bills fall in that.
I don't know. That's a good question. Both.
My first ever Frozen Four, 1989. I'll never forget the Gopher Band saluting the Harvard Band by chanting, "What's a crimson?"
Doesn't take much to impress you, huh?
Yeah. I was young.
State school.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I saw, speaking of Harvard, I saw Harvard-Cornell, big rivalry game in the past. And, you know, Kevin, you've seen a lot of those. Bus, you've been to one. This one didn't have the animosity level to it that was really kind of unusual, just in the fact it stood out that way. That it didn't have the usual, you know, there's a palpable feel. You know how when you go to a rivalry game, it just has that buzz in the building and
vitriol.
And yeah, on the ice, you know, you can see some of that stuff. And this time it wasn't that way. It's kind of a mellow, blah, 2-2 tie. So
that's because I wasn't there, Gladdy. It's fine.
Kevin wasn't there to.
Was there any seafood involved?
Yeah, they threw their fish. Yeah.
You sound so excited.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, as I was explaining to some people, you know, it's nice for the kids. It's nice to have that. But for the people who go every game or most games, it's just kind of a nuisance, you know. You've got all these one-time-a-year fans who show up and do their thing. And if you're, you know, used to parking in a certain spot and seeing the same people and, you know, the concourses, just like, what are you doing here? Leave us alone.
Go away.
I mean, I don't know.
You fishmonger.
Feel that way a little bit. So.
Very funny. Very nice.
We'll see what happens.
I got a question. I'll put this out to the public.
Go for it.
If you know where the DQ Cup is, will you let me know? With this rumored new Minnesota-only tournament, the Minnesota Bean Pot or whatever they're going to call it, that's going to start up in 2 years, people have been asking, what happened to the DQ Cup?
Well, I think it should be called, first of all, the Campus Pizza Cup.
Absolutely.
And secondly, that's all I have to say about that.
Spicy Special MVP Award?
That's right. I sat down with a gentleman from College Hockey Inc. last week and had a spicy special.
Delicious. Like,
is that code?
No.
It's thin crust.
Glad he likes the curds.
Yeah, those are pretty terrific.
I went so far as to call Don Lucia today and said, Don, do you have the DQ Cup? He said, I have no idea, because Minnesota was the last team that won it in 2008. And then he, like, yelled down the hall to his assistant and said, anybody got the DQ Cup here? No, we don't know where it is. He says,
check the trophy cases.
Yeah, he actually said, if you want me to go out to the front lobby and check the trophy case, I can. I said, no, don't bother. But if you know the whereabouts of the DQ Cup, find me on Twitter, whatever, let me know. We have a mystery to solve. It's like the Holy Grail or the Lost Ark.
No, not really.
We're searching for the DQ Cup.
Well, maybe, since it's called the DQ Cup, it's with the CCHA Supplemental Discipline Office from DQs they have in Happy.
Riley Shahan has it this week.
That's a great idea.
Pass it around.
The trophy of shame.
Like a championship belt.
DQ Cup.
The email pops up, you know, every couple days from CCHA for immediate release. I'm like, oh, who's not playing hockey this week?
Yeah, exactly. So. What was the wording they used in that? I can't remember. I wrote the stupid thing, and then now I can't remember. It was like, was it dangerous hit or something like that?
Oh, that seems.
It was something along those lines. It was. But I also like it with the Shea in one. It was like DQ'd. Just kidding. But he's DQ'd the next night. Like, this is this big dramatic second release about the appeal process. Yeah. And then the appeal process took all of like 13 hours.
Yeah, it's not exactly like going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. I mean, your guy's suspended, but if you appeal, wink wink, we'll let him play on national TV Friday night.
You don't have to file briefs or anything or get a writ of habeas corpus.
Wow.
I don't even know if that means anything, but anyways.
You better at your job.
Huh?
You better
no. at your job. No, the less I know, the better, trust me. Yeah. But, you know, and kind of to, you know, to, I don't know if the story's worth a rehash or not, but.
Sure, why not?
Long story short, referees, you know, in the Western Notre Dame game from a couple weeks back, I think it was January 13th, called a 5-minute major in a game misconduct on Notre Dame. But they called it on the wrong guy. They called they put Jeff Costello in the box. Or, you know, tossed him, actually, because he got the game misconduct, instead of Riley Shahan. So in, you know, game goes on, whatever. Week later, you know, the following week, CCHA says, oh, by the way, Riley, you're suspended for your hit. And, you know, Jeff Jackson, and I think, you know, I think he has a point, says, hey, you know, it's not our fault that the refs made a mistake and threw the wrong guy out. I mean, I think that's obviously the point he was trying to make in appealing the suspension, and you know, it went nowhere. And it should be noted that the officials who, for lack of a better term, blew that call did not work the game the next night. But yeah, I think he brought up a valid point in appealing that suspension.
Definitely.
I think he probably knew going in that he wasn't, that it probably wasn't going to go anywhere, but.
You have to get on the record.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is he's probably right in saying, hey, the refs probably should be reprimanded, too. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting with that is, this is kind of an obscure memory from when I was a student journalist at Michigan, but there was a game at Joe Louis Arena where a kid named Tyler Swiston, who only briefly played at Michigan before he went back, I think, to the WHL, or went to the WHL, there was a hit from behind another obscure name, Chris Fragner, you know, hit a guy from Colorado College from behind. But for some reason, they called it on Tyler Swiston. So Swiston goes to the locker room, showers, changes. He's back in his suit. And then in between periods, I don't know if they looked at the video or what, but they actually brought Swiston back into the game and kicked Fragner out after Swiston had already been showered and changed.
Yeah,
showered,
I think,
and changed and ready
I
to
think
go.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah, it was the GLI, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was against Colorado College. The game was a total disaster. I mean, Colorado College just smoked Michigan in the game, but they kicked the one guy out, let him shower and change, and then in between periods brought him back.
I might have been at that game. What year would have been approximately?
It would have been
like 4 years ago, wasn't it?
It would have been like December 05 then.
Nah, probably not. Yeah, probably not then.
Let's see here. Let's see if I can pull that up quick. Yeah, it would have been 05.
Well, because I was going to say, I think that was the freshman year when they had that huge freshman class with Cogliano and Johnson, and those guys were all off at World Juniors, so that's part of the reason it was just a...
Yeah, they were dumb.
Bomb show for...
Oh, that's why you would have CC. Those guys in the lineup.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
They had... Yeah, Porter was there. Is that Porter's rookie year? Freshman year?
No, he would have been...
Or was he a sophomore?
Then.
Matera was there.
Inch favorite.
Yeah, because, yeah, that was... Porter was a sophomore.
Jason Bailey.
Yep, so it was Johnson, Matera, Cogliano, Bailey, Swiston, Zach McVoy, who ended up at Lake Superior State. Yeah. And that was only, like, half of the class.
Yeah, it was huge. Billy Sauer.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that was... Yeah, Sauer was in that class, wasn't he?
Yep, I'm looking it up. I've got it on HockeyDB right now. That was quite the class. Well, I mean, what do you think about it? You're using what?
I've got the 2005 inch recruiting rankings.
No.
Cogliano number 2 that year in coming forwards.
Who was number 1?
Kessel what?
Yeah, that was a pretty good pick.
Jeez, look at this top 10. Phil Kessel, Cogliano, Skilly, Chad Rao, 5 Mason Raymond, 6 Tim Kennedy, 7 Dan Rydell, then Blake Wheeler, Jonathan Taves, Brock Trotter. I mean, those guys are in the league or played in the league.
A couple of those guys are getting paychecks right now.
Yeah. Dan Rydell is like, hey, kids, look at this. Abdelkader, Gerby, Oshie in the next 10. Ryan Stola.
That was a heck of a year.
Yeah, that was just the forwards.
I think I remember putting that one together. The reason Taves was so low is just because he was like 16 or 17 when he came in. And
yeah, and little.
Yeah, and a wisp.
Jack Johnson was number 1 in defense ratings that year, incoming defenseman, which also included NHLers Chris Butler, Matt Niskanen, Matera, 8th, Jason Garrison, Mr. Garrison. Matt Taramina, he's got some time with the Devils this year. John Quick, Ocho, Sauer. That was a good year. Some good players came into college hockey that year.
Blake Wheeler's having a nice season. He's become an important player on that Jets team.
Is he having a good year? I haven't seen much of them.
Yeah, no, he really is having a good year. I mean, it's not a team with a star on offense in any stretch of the imagination. They've got a lot of kind of complimentary guys, but he's playing a nice role on that team.
Good deal.
Yep.
I haven't looked at even the standings too much in that league. Oh yeah. Rangers are doing good.
Number 1 at the break.
Well, Winnipeg's not so bad.
Don't even think of saying my Winnipeg is no. No. Back off.
No, they're definitely not.
your team plays with a fish sticks guy on its jersey.
They're not my Jets. They are my Islanders though. Right? For one reason only.
You can have the Rams, you can have the Isles, you can have the Huskies. You don't touch my Jets.
Oh no. You can have your stupid Jets.
I do.
Actually,
I lose them every now and then, but they come back.
I thank the Jets for clearing all those captive audience eyes from the sold-out Phillips Arena so they can concentrate on Atlanta Braves baseball.
That was an interesting stat this week. Somebody posted the TV ratings for NHL hockey. Just had the American teams, but the Phoenix Coyotes average 6,000 households a game.
Ugh.
And they are double what the Florida Panthers get.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good. And Buffalo is still number one in the country, but apparently they're on the brink of falling into second place.
Well, they can't watch their team on their network anymore.
Yeah, they have that big time war going on. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Matt Molson, 22 goals.
Here we go.
43 points. That's why they're my Islanders. I love Matt Molson.
This is a regular agenda item on the podcast. The Molson section.
Glad he will make fun of the ice surface at Mariucci and mention Matt Molson. Write it down.
Things to do list.
I wish the lottery numbers were this easy to predict. So yeah.
The Matt Molson section of the podcast brought to you by Labatt.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Although, Matt, I guess full credit for the Labatt stuff goes to the former CCHA beat writer. One of the greatest questions to a CCHA player of all time.
Yankee?
Yeah. What's your favorite beer to the Western Michigan player named Kevin Labatt?
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed. Matt Molson's wife and John Quick's wife are sisters.
Interesting.
Yeah. Saw that in a little LA Kings feature last week. It's John Quick's birthday last week also. I believe he turned 25.
Would you ask? He's an 86. He'd be 26.
Okay.
Would you ask Ryan Miller what his favorite beer is? The guy who has Miller Time on the back of his helmet?
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, I think that has been a reasonable amount of deterioration. Anything else for the people? Last call, shout-outs?
Nah, I got nothing.
Nobody on staff ran a marathon this week, so.
Correcto.
Unless you did and didn't tell me. No?
No, it was, it got rained out.
You canceled.
You would have told me.
It got rained out.
Called on account of lightning.
Yes.
I drove past a marathon gas station.
That totally counts. We're good.
It does.
There's a town near here called Marathon, New York.
Cool.
Their high school nickname is the Olympians. Which is pretty sweet, I think.
That's setting a high standard for your kids.
Yeah.
Should have been nipple rashes.
What?
Because when you run the marathon, when you run the marathon, you get the nipple rash if you don't put the Vaseline on there.
Wow!
I learned this from covering Grandma's marathon in Duluth.
What are you talking about? That's a thing?
Jess?
Yes.
It's a thing.
Oh, boy.
And I got to say this.
I'm going to be very careful Googling that.
Nipple. Hey, you know what else is a thing? That's what she said.
Yeah. What else is a thing, boss?
And Jess will back me up on this, too. It's very common for marathoners to lose control of certain.
Yep.
Muscle.
Yep.
Gotcha.
It's not a pretty scene.
No.
Oh,
I've covered a few Grandma's marathons and covered a few Twin Cities marathons, and I got to say this. There, you know, at the finish line, there's like the place where the regular runners go, and then they always have like a tent that's for the elite athletes, and that's where you usually do your interviews of, you know, the winners or whatever. And it's a tent, okay? Keep that in mind. And you've got people in there that have just run 26 miles, and, you know, sweat is a factor. Other bodily functions are a factor. There are few places on earth that smell worse than the elite athlete tent after a marathon, especially if it's a warm day. Oh,
so that's why I'm not an elite athlete.
Better or worse than a hockey locker room?
Much, much worse.
Hockey gloves are way ahead of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hockey locker rooms have some sort of ventilation.
Yeah.
I know of a few that don't.
No.
I would take hockey glove over.
Elite athlete tent?
Yeah.
Over the fear any day.
It's not a pretty place.
Code Brown.
As Jerry Seinfeld once said, what he loves about marathons, a guy from Kenya, a woman from Russia, and 10,000 losers.
But you achieved the, yeah, wow, how far we've come in the marathon scale from one podcast to the next.
From congratulating Larry to
praising the virtues of achieving a goal and setting out. Maybe we should
ask Larry what happened on his run.
We'll bring in Larry for the next podcast, a veteran marathon competitor.
He would have the good. I would think he'd pull over. You know what I mean? Go on, Larry.
He'd get a 20.
Well, they do have places along the route where you can take care of that, but if you're an elite guy intent on winning the thing, you'll run through anything.
Nope.
In that regard, we're happy to not be very elite around here.
Here's some... Glad you're an elite drinker.
Yeah, something like that.
Ironically, a lot of the functions are the same.
Yeah.
All right.
Ollie Williams covered a marathon once.
It's going right.
All right.
Chocolate rain.
Now we're deteriorated, baby.
I think we can put I was going to bring up such pleasant and worthy, you know, I was going to close the podcast by wishing a happy Australia Day to Delta Goodrum. And here you guys are talking about bodily functions of marathons. Those are two very opposite images right there. Somebody's got to class it up around here. I'll be that guy. All right.
Where's Rook when we need him to class it up?
Grow up, guys, Rook said. All right. Anybody else? Parting shots?
Some good games on the docket this weekend. Get out and see them if you can.
Yeah, go to the rinks. Mild winter. Get out there. Go to the rinks. Can't blame the weather.
Yeah, tell me about a mild winter.
Your air conditioning was broke. He's all grumpy.
Have you used your snowblower yet, Dad?
Oh, yeah, daily.
It's got like one of those John Deere model.
You mix the pina coladas in it or what?
Oh man, I like snow isn't even real to me right now, but I am going to be in Boston in about 48 hours, so I guess I might find out about it.
All right, well, safe travel, everyone else. As Kevin said, go to the rinks. And for James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, Kevin Zeese, Mike Ottobus, this is Joe Gladyszewski. And this has been the Inch Podcast.